Chapter 3. Emily Perkins raced through the dense forest as if she were being chased by a bear, running flat out. The Ruhar combat skin suit she wore enhanced her speed and included sensors and stabilizers to compensate for her slow human reaction time, but the blinking yellow dots in the synthetic view projected onto the inside of her helmet visor showed the enemy was getting closer with every second. Every time she stumbled on the uneven ground, every time she had to leap over a fallen log, every time she ducked to clear a low-hanging tree branch, she lost ground to her pursuers. Time. They needed time.
Jarrett, cover fire!
Perkins ordered, hating the words as she spoke, but they had no choice. Jesse Coulter and Dave Chaika were already dead. She had seen them fall to enemy fire, and their icons now blinked red as their suits reported life functions had ceased. It was a disaster, a total disaster. She was about to lose her entire team in the space of a few minutes. The enemy was too fast, too skilled, and humans had too little time with their advanced Ruhar combat gear. They never had a chance. Coulter and Chaika had remained behind to set up an ambush, so Perkins, Jarrett, and their alien liaison Nert might get away, but their sacrifice had been for nothing. Even firing from a well-chosen defilade position, behind the crest of a rise in the ground and between fallen logs that gave good cover, the two human soldiers accounted for only 4 enemy dead before they had both been killed by guided rockets that shredded their bodies despite the tough but flexible skin suits.
On it,
Shauna replied and dropped to the ground instantly, rolling over to rest behind a tree. Her ragged breathing made her head bob around so much inside the helmet that she could not eye-click to engage the targeting system, so she relied on the scope of her rifle. 7 yellow dots were advancing in good order, 2 on the left, 2 on the right, and 3 in the center. The enemy moved fast, so fast over broken ground. Their tactics were excellent, leapfrogging from cover to cover, with one group laying down suppressing fire while the other two groups raced ahead. Since Jesse and Dave had shot 4 of the enemy, they had grown wary of the sting even lowly humans could inflict, so they had taken to using cover wherever they could find it. She looked away from the rifle's targeting scope to see the terrain around her, verifying the info from the synthetic view projected onto the inside of her helmet's visor. A little voice in her head reminded her that those 7 yellow dots were a guess, a composite image based on data collected by her suit's passive sensors. The sensors had a wide variety of data to work with. As the enemy moved, they created vibrations in the air that were picked up as faint sounds, although the enemy's own suits sent out dampener waves that partly canceled out their own vibrations and could also project false vibrations at a distance of up to a quarter kilometer. By moving at high speed through the air, the enemy left ionized trails through the air, but these too could be false sensor data because ion trails could be masked or faked. Heat from the overworked bodies and the powered suits was a good source of passive location data. Except in combat mode, their mech suits could temporarily store heat in a sink so the suit's surface matched the surrounding temperature. Often, the best source of data were brief bursts of laser light as the enemy's suits kept up a line-of-sight data link between them, but her own suit could only detect backscatter of those laser pulses, and the enemy suits constantly projected false pulses to confuse her sensors. Like her own Ruhar skin suit, the enemy's armor had a limited stealth and chameleon capability, so she could not even trust her own eyes. The enemy could be approximately where the visor indicated, or those could be false images based on outdated or faked data. Stilling her breathing, she successfully eye-clicked after 2 missed attempts and adjusted to sniper mode. The yellow dots changed to yellow circles to show the true, probable location of the enemy, and Shauna cursed to herself. Those rings displaying the circular error of probability were big, too big to be useful to her for targeting. Worse, 3 of the circles were a pale, blinking yellow, showing the sensors did not trust the data on those 3 enemy soldiers. And there weren't only 7 circles. Off to the right were 2 fuzzy pink circles, the visor's way of telling her there might be 9 of the enemy facing her. She told herself there could be as few as 5 actual people out there chasing her, but 5-to-1 odds were nearly as bad as 9-to-1.
Damn it!
Shauna screamed in her head, but no sound came from her mouth. The shout would pinpoint her position to the enemy as surely as if she had turned off her stealthwear and stood up in full view.
Think, Shauna, think. I need to find...
One of the yellow circles became a bright yellow dot with a blinking green arrow pointing to it, which Shauna knew meant her suit had picked up a transient, a short spike of data. Probably a sound, such as someone stepping on a dry twig in the forest. The enemy would know their mistake and move to throw off her targeting, so she reacted without hesitation, gently depressing her rifle's trigger button. Invisible bolts of Mazer energy lanced out, stitching a line across trees and undergrowth, and she heard a panicked scream. Shauna did not wait to verify she had hit the target. She rolled to her right into a shallow depression and wiggled backwards, then got on hands and knees when she could, crawling quickly and keeping low. Although the Mazer energy was invisible to the naked eyes of her and the enemy, all their suits could see the Mazer bolts clearly, and her position had been pinpointed exactly. The tree she had used for cover was being sliced apart by Mazer beams, chunks blowing off the trunk as the water within the wood boiled and exploded from the microwave energy. She was pelted by flying splinters of charred wood, but none of the deadly beams hit her. Now the targeting data was resolving as the enemy rushed her position, three circles becoming dots as her suit became supremely confident of the enemy's location. Shit, she cursed inwardly. Another yellow dot wasn't moving, representing the soldier she had shot, but the formerly pink circles to her right were now yellow dots racing past her. The enemy was engaging with only three soldiers, while the others continued to pursue Perkins and Nert. Damn it. She had no chance to do anything about the soldiers that already outflanked her. Colonel Perkins, at least four have gotten past me and are moving in your direction. The only reply was a click, as Perkins could not risk giving away her own position by transmitting more than nanosecond burst. Okay, what to do next? Shauna could run. The direction would not matter, as she couldn't hope to escape. To qualify for infantry duty with the U.S. Army, she had trained to the point where every muscle in her body screamed at her, to the point where soft tissue injuries risked ruining her dreams. A partially torn rotator cuff, a sprained ACL, sharp heel pain from plantar fasciitis, she had not let any of that delay her training, not let mere pain stop her from proving she was physically capable of keeping up with male soldiers. Now, with the incredible technology of the Ruhar combat skin suit, she could run, jump, lift just like any man. In some ways, her better fine motor control allowed her to handle a rifle better than a human man. That is why she had been designated the team's sniper. Sniper. That's what she needed to do. The three yellow dots in front of her had stopped moving and were now slowly becoming circles as her suit lost confidence in their exact location. She knew the enemy was similarly unsure of her position, perhaps more unsure as she had stopped moving before they did, and she had not been racing through the forest making noise. Slowly she rose up onto her elbows and eye-clicked to dim the synthetic view, zooming in her sight on the real world, relying on old-fashioned photons reflecting off objects into her eyes. Nothing. She used the dimmed synthetic view to guide her eyes, but there wasn't anything useful to see out there. Trees, bushes, undergrowth, vines hanging down. The area was near a river, and the ground was spongy and swampy in spots, with plants like dark-colored ferns growing densely in clumps. The vines were a hazard. They were not poisonous, and most did not have thorns, but they hung down, and a running person could get tripped or tangled easily. She saw vines swaying where the enemy must have passed by, for there was little wind that day to stir the air. Swaying vines only told her where the enemy had been, not where they were, and the circles in her visor slowly grew larger as her suit lost track of the enemy. There! A clump of ferns moved in a sudden jerk, and Shauna's pinky finger selected her rifle's railgun mode. Mazers were no good for shooting through underbrush. She needed the explosive-tipped flechettes of the railgun. Ruhar rifles were almost silent, as the Mazers made no sound at all until they hit something. In conditions of rain or high humidity, the air could sizzle quietly as the beam passed through. But that was minor, compared to the explosive crack of Kristang projectile weapons. Even the flechettes were quiet, because the electromagnetic rails accelerated the flechettes to just below the local speed of sound, avoiding a supersonic boom. The flechettes had a limited ability to guide themselves to a target, and they had tiny rocket motors to extend their range and kinetic impact so the explosive-tipped flechettes hit with nearly the same velocity they left the rifle barrel. Shauna had at first been skeptical of a rifle with such low muzzle velocity, until she gained experience firing the weapon. And now she loved it. Even the nearly silent railgun could be detected by enemy sensors, but the emitted sound was rarely loud enough to pinpoint the shooter's location. Against Kristang, she could select the double-tap mode, a maser bolt followed by a flechette round. The maser beam hit the rigid armor of a Kristang suit, burning off and weakening the outer layer and providing a hot spot for the flechette to guide itself into. When the flechette hit the weakened area of the armor, it would punch through and launch its binary explosive inside to churn a Kristang body into jelly. Another press of her pinky kicked the selector up into three-round burst mode, and she gently pressed the trigger button. The rifle had an internal weight that launched forward as the electromagnetic rails accelerated each flechette, so she felt almost no kick against her shoulder, and the rifle's muzzle barely moved between rounds. Three flechettes reached out, and she saw an arm flung up above the ferns as an enemy was struck. She ducked down and hugged the ground as returning fire scorched the tree branches above her. One down, two to go. But she could not move from her position. One of the enemy was firing to keep her pinned down, as the other no doubt tried to circle around and outflank her. The nearly continuous enemy fire scorched the air, confusing her suit's sensors, confused her passive sensors. But she had other options. She rolled over onto her back and fired her rifle's maser in a long burst to make the enemy take cover. Then she reached onto her belt and tossed upward a hummingbird-sized sensor drone. The tiny device soared 20 feet over her head and zipped away, unable to climb higher, or its sensors would be blocked by the tree canopy. The mini drone survived for 5 seconds, its active sensor pulses attracting attention and ensuring its quick death. 5 seconds was long enough, more than Shauna had hoped. Having received data from the powerful sensor pulses of the drone, Shauna's suit had mapped out a momentarily clear picture of the surrounding forest, and she took in the info in a flash. One enemy was lying prone 100 meters away toward the river, while the other soldier was racing on her right, nearly even with her. Shauna exploded up onto her knees, sent a barrage of maser pulses at the running soldier, and dropped back to the ground in less than 2 seconds, holding her breath as the branches above her were sliced by return fire. Another one down, her suit clearly indicated she had killed or disabled the running soldier. She was now facing only one enemy, and hope surged within her, hope that was unexpected and unwanted, as thinking about the possibility of survival was a distraction she could not afford. She needed to... Her visor blanked out, going clear, as the suit's sensors temporarily were knocked offline. EMP, she realized in a panic. The lone remaining enemy soldier must have fired a rocket toward her, a rocket that did not explode, but instead generated a powerful electromagnetic pulse that partially disrupted the mechanisms of her skin suit. She was temporarily blind, other than what her eyes could see and what her ears could hear. With a thumb, she broke the seal on her helmet faceplate and swung it upward, holding her breath to listen with desperation. While her suit's sensors were blind, the enemy would have been unaffected by the EMP, as the energy weapon would have been tuned not to emit frequencies used by the enemy mech suit. What to do? She couldn't stay where she was, and her suit's power assist motors were fully active, though her own muscles had to provide all the guidance without suit sensors scanning the ground ahead to prevent her from stumbling. She turned to look behind her, where the underbrush thinned out, the ground there being saturated with water in a marsh. The ground where she had taken cover was spongy, and as she moved, the water broke away in a sucking sound that made her cringe, for the sound surely gave away her exact location. Holding still, she listened and heard a crashing sound to her left. Having little choice as her sensors were still only 70% reset, she smoothly rolled up to one knee and scanned the forest to the left, seeing only ferns and low-hanging tree branches swaying. She squeezed off a 3-round railgun burst, feeling the stock buzzing lightly against her shoulder. Switching back to the maser beam, she was knocked to the ground as a maser burned into her right shoulder from behind. The sound she heard must have been a decoy, the enemy tossing a stick or something to her right. She had been a fool, and now she paid the price. The skin suit had absorbed part of the maser energy, partly by the suit dropping stealth and going silver to reflect the high-energy photons, and partly by the outer layer flaking away to expel the heat. It was not enough, not to compensate for a close-range direct hit. Her right side was immobile, the helmet now totally offline. Painfully, with the suit's motors almost fighting against her, she held the rifle with her left hand and fell back against a tree to face right, looking for the enemy. And seeing nothing. The enemy stealthware and chameleon capability was fully active. Without synthetic vision, she had to hope she could detect movement out of her peripheral vision as her Ruhar trainers had taught her. What the hell? The enemy was probably staring right at her, gloating as she slumped against the tree, nearly helpless. With nothing else to do, she screamed defiance and cut loose with the Mazer on semi-auto mode, sweeping the forest in front of her. Her rash action was rewarded by a glimpse of an enemy silhouette lit up by Mazer bolts, just as a railgun dart slammed into her chest. Emily Perkins's heart skipped a beat as she saw the icon representing Sergeant Shauna Jarrett go red, to reflect yet another human was dead on the battlefield. Perkins was now the only human survivor of her team, with her Ruhar liaison Nert Derndorf the only living being on her side in the battle.
Nert, go ahead.
No, Colonel Perkins, I will not leave you. We are almost there.
Perkins did not waste time or energy arguing with the teenage alien.
To the right, along this stream.
She turned, her skin suit stabilizing her clumsy motions to prevent her from falling in the high-speed maneuver. With the power assist of her suit motors, she was running at the speed of an all-out sprint, a speed that by herself she could only keep up for 50 meters or less. But she had been running at that pace for a full 2 kilometers away from the river. It was blindingly, astonishingly fast, and it was not enough. 4 icons representing the enemy were gaining on them, gaining rapidly, with 2 veering left and 2 right. The enemy was trying to encircle the 2 survivors, and there was little Perkins could do. Splashing along the stream bed, she and Nert were momentarily away from the enemy's line of sight as she could see her goal, a defensible position. When she began running up and away from the stream to a low ridge, she urged Nert onward, knowing the young alien was holding back his own pace to cover her. As Nert ran, he was firing his rifle's Mazer backwards blindly. She didn't bother to stop him, for just then she reached the top of the ridge and folded her legs to crash down into a shallow swale, rolling over onto her belly and bringing her rifle up to sight over the ridgeline. The position was not as defensible as it had looked when she scouted the area that morning. The terrain was terribly exposed behind her, and the ridge was no more than 3 feet tall, barely enough for her to take cover behind. Nert ran toward her, and she raised her left hand, waving to him. The alien cadet charged up the slope in 2 long strides, ducking under a vine and bounding high over the ridge top, whooping triumphantly, until his body jerked as he was hit by a Mazer beam and a railgun dart at the same time. He fell forward to hit the ground hard with a thud Perkins felt through her suit.
Nert! Nert!
Perkins screamed frantically, dropping her rifle and crawling to the cadet. But he was already gone.
Son of a—
Perkins bit her lip inside the helmet. As the only survivor, success of the mission was solely her responsibility now. Shoving her emotions down inside herself, she reached for her rifle and yanked a spare power cell off Nert's waist belt. The counter on top of her rifle indicated she had only 6 flechette rounds and 18% energy charge remaining. The Mazer exciter would eventually burn out, but that took thousands of shots, nothing she needed to worry about right then. Keeping low, she crawled to her left, cringing as she bumped into Nert's limp form, moving on knees and elbows toward a fallen tree where she could hide behind the upturned roots that would give her good cover for—
Ow!
Something slammed into her butt cheeks from the left, knocking her to the ground hard. Apparently crawling on her knees lifted her too high off the ground, and she had paid for her mistake, a lesson she should have remembered from crawling under low-hanging wire all the way back in basic training.
Stupid, stupid!
Her visor showed the skin suit had properly gone rigid when its proximity sensor field detected the incoming railgun round, and at the extreme angle, the round had failed to penetrate. The damage was done anyway, as she could not move her legs. Something vital in the skin suit's motor mechanism must have been knocked offline. Laboriously, she crawled forward on her belly, using only her hands, sliding the rifle ahead of her and dragging herself to it. Only 3 more meters and she could turn over, her back to the protection of the tree roots and a partially obstructed view in the direction of the river. Her visor was showing only large, fuzzy yellow circles as the suit had lost track of the enemy. No matter. They had to come from only two directions, and she could cover both. Sliding the rifle forward again, she eye-clicked to open a menu option and selected it. With one last effort, she heaved herself to the down tree, pulling herself onto her backside with difficulty since her legs had become useless. Sighting along her rifle, she scanned the ground in front of her, seeing nothing. Turning to the right, she had the briefest glance of an enemy helmet and rifle popping up over a bush. Then a burst of darts hit her.